everybody. Welcome to One Board Podcast, the podcast where we talk about family gaming and how to get your family around the dinner table so you can play more of those sweet, sweet games. Rick is my co-host here. You may know him from such hit shows as How I Left Your Mother. How are you doing, Rick?
I'm doing well. Yes, How I Left Your Mother, the little talked about sequel to How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
It was very different.
It was like two episodes because you basically explained it and then you were done. And it was like,
and they were only available on MySpace.
I love MySpace video. The other voice that you'll hear today is my friend Bob. Bob, introduce yourself. How'd you get into gaming, man? Give us a little bit.
Hey, everybody. How you doing? I am Bob. I'm good buddies with Ryan. The way I got into gaming was, well, obviously I grew up playing games, but
oh,
not...
I thought you were saying you grew up, which that doesn't happen with board gamers. I didn't understand what you were saying.
I grew up playing games, but I just didn't know, you wouldn't call them modern board games. I grew up playing classics like Monopoly and Yahtzee and, you know, those type of games, Battleship, Connect Four. I knew I had an interest in board games. So I had heard about a board game store, and I walked into a board game store, and that was the end of all of my money.
That's good. It's usually either crack cocaine or board games.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I chose board games, so that worked out well.
Good job, Bob.
Yeah, thanks.
Right.
Cool. So,
you know what? We've had these starter stories, and it's always something like starting with Monopoly or Yahtzee. And I'm imagining your kids, Ryan, like, is it going to be that they're going to do a podcast about just playing Monopoly? And it's like, well, I started on those random games like Sushi Go and Ninja Camp, and now, like, I'm really into the classics, really hardcore.
That's
like, I played
true.
Monopoly 40 times this year.
That's true. With hobby board games being so accessible, that's an interesting thing. What is going to be the Monopoly of our kids' generation? Like, what are they going to look back at and be like, man, I played that piece of crap and it just was the worst. You know, that's interesting to think about. Like, what will that be? You know,
add it to season two, or that'll be season two.
Excellent. Actually, we're in episode six. We're actually only doing a 10 episode run for the first season of the One Board Podcast. And so as we come to the end of this, actually, Rick and I are talking about what season two should look like. So if you have any ideas, we would love you to share them. You can share them on our Facebook page at facebook.com/oneboardfamily, or you can just drop us a line at contact@oneboardfamily. We would love to hear your ideas. Seriously, we want you guys to kind of mold and shape the show. And that's why we're doing 10 episode seasons, so they can be broken down and we can have kind of a different emphasis as we go into new seasons each time. So today we are talking about dice games, and that's why we have Bob with us, because Bob, you have a love-hate relationship with dice games, and that's our topic for today. Isn't that correct?
That is correct. I do love dice. They're not always loved by everyone in the board game community. There are some that prefer less luck, but I like the tension that dice offer in games. I like the surprise, you know?
Yeah. And Rick recently did a review for Vegas the Dice Game. That's a game that, Bob, you actually know of. You own that game. And Rick did a review for it for our YouTube channel. You guys, why don't you guys kind of discuss that game and kind of the role that dice play in it and kind of what you think about the game?
Well, I think for me, you know, that game is all dice. You know, in there's different levels of dice involvement in board games. And, you know, the more dice are involved in the game, the more luck is involved. And so you have to find the right balance. And it all kind of depends on the game's other mechanics. So, for instance, in Vegas Dice Game, the whole game is essentially based on luck of the roll. You do have the involvement of where am I going to place the dice that I roll and where are they going to go. But there is quite a bit of luck involved. However, I think that fits really well into the theme. I mean, the theme is Vegas. And if Vegas is about anything, It's about luck and hitting the jackpot and things like that. So I think in that game, in that arena, I really like how dice kind of fit in to that mechanic.
Yeah, yeah.
I love the included mechanic that they, or the included aspect of that game. Don't get me wrong, I love that game at its full player ability of five players. But at less than five players, I love the inclusion of the white dice.
Definitely.
It's, so tell me about the fun. I haven't played it. I haven't played this one yet. So tell me about how the white dice change things for Vegas, the dice game.
So basically, when you roll on your turn, you're rolling your allotted amount of dice for your player color. But based on the number of players that are in the game, you also get a set of white die. Or dice. Is that the word? Is it dice or is it die?
It's die if it's... Die? Is it die if it's multiple?
I was never
it's
good.
It's die if it's one and dice if it's multiple.
That's okay, true. Cool. That's right. True.
Okay.
We got to go to the educator, man. I don't know these things.
Yeah.
So you get a set of white dice, and when you roll them with your own colored dice, when you roll your dice, you either select... one of all of the same number to place. So if there happen to be white die and they're included in the number, you have to place those, but they work as a separate, what'd you call it? Ghost player, I guess.
Right. They're a neutral player. And so
a neutral. There's
interesting. Okay.
Right. And so they end up being a factor at the casinos because there are six casinos. You put the dice out. Whoever has the most dice at the casino that match the number, because each of the casinos is assigned to one of the dice sides, whoever has the most dice at that casino wins it. If you throw the neutral player's dice in there, it can really mess things up, because another one of the awesome mechanics that's so basic but really changes the game is the fact that ties mean nobody gets money.
Okay.
So if you tie with another player, even if you tie for first, you're both getting nothing. So you could both have three dice each on that casino, and the person that has one die on that casino would win it because you guys cancel each other out.
Interesting.
Yeah, okay. So it's a balance of deciding, do I get rid of these dice now because I can waste them on a spot where I'm not going to place any of my personal dice?
Okay.
Or do I save them to try and ruin other people's games? But in doing that, you can also screw yourself out of spots and disrupt your own game. So it's just another added gamble on top of the already gambling game that's, you know what I mean?
The reason why we talk about the love and hate relationship of dice games is because I think most dice games include a risk-reward type of thing. I know the first time I ever played something like Farkle, you know, I was like, oh man, I'm going to push my luck. I'm going to throw some more dice. And the first time that you really come up short, you're like, this game is broken, you know? So on the love side of things, while we're talking about games that we really enjoy with dice, I love the game Sagrada. It's funny because I was talking about somebody was asking about Sagrada on a board game Facebook page, and they were asking about Sagrada, whether or not it's worth the buy. They found a copy of it, and some people were chiming in and being like, love Sagrada. And then there were people almost equal saying not a big fan of Sagrada. I personally love it because what you do is you are a stained glass, each player at the table up to four players. You're building the stained glass window using these really cool translucent dice. There's an active player who rolls all the dice, and then everybody has to draft out of that pool of dice. And it's cool because it reminds me of a puzzle that you have to put together, but you don't know what part of the puzzle you can complete until those dice are rolled. And sometimes the luck is not in your favor, but then it has an added element of using tools. These tools can be purchased so that you can modify the dice and things like that. It's such a good game, and I think it's beautiful. That's one of those games that anytime we play Sagrada out, you know, in a public public space or we play Sagrada at a friend's house, people are like, whoa, this is a beautiful game. I really like this. It's aesthetically pleasing, and you don't feel like you're constantly battling the dice. You know, you feel like there is a little bit of give that it allows you to modify with those tools.
Oh, yeah. It's a beautiful – and it is, like you said, it is a beautiful game.
You're the one who introduced me to it, Bob, because you –
Was
yeah,
he?
So we played during lunch one day, and you showed me how to play. And sure enough, immediately I added it to my Amazon wish list, and my parents picked it up for me for my birthday last year. And it gets a lot of play around here.
Yeah, it's really good dice modifier game. Dice placement, dice modifier, and I just – sometimes – when you put abilities out on the table, it's like, do I go there first? If I don't go there now, I'm going to have to use so many victory points to get that. I know I'm going to need it later in the game, you know?
Well, I think what you're talking about is one of the approaches to using dice that takes some of the luck out of it. I think you see something similar in Castles of Burgundy, which is pretty popular game and a really good game, where you don't have everything ruined by a dice roll. So in Castles of Burgundy, the actions that you can take are based on the dice that you roll. However, there's just so many options that even if you don't get exactly what you were wanting to do, there would still be something you can do that would lead you to more of a victory condition. I think it's where games start to completely ruin what you were planning based on a dice roll, where I start to get frustrated. The one that stands out to me as far as most frustrating is Elder Sign. And I don't know if either of you have ever played that, but Elder Sign, the very specific dice rolls that you have to get, and it's cooperative and it's kind of horror based, but there are these little missions that pop up and you have to get very precise dice rolls in order to accomplish the missions. And I know when I've played that game with people, I can get frustrated super easy when the past three times that I've tried to accomplish a mission, even if I've used items to kind of bulk myself up and do different things, even if I've done that and I still lose, I start to get frustrated. Even if it might fit with the theme and it's a sense of doom and destruction, I'm like, I don't care about the theme. I'm just sick and tired of losing. So...
That is the dice version of Eldritch Horror.
Yes.
Yes, yes. I've played that once, and that will probably be the last time I play.
Yeah. And going back to Castles of Burgundy, Aaron and I played that this weekend, actually. That's been our go-to game for a while when me and Aaron have, a little over an hour to play, and it's just the two of us. It plays so well at two players, but I love the fact that these little worker tiles that – so one of the mechanics in the game is you can turn a die in to make two little workers, and those two little workers can modify future dice. And so if you're a poor planner, yes, you're at the mercy of the dice. But if you plan well – there's always opportunities, you know? And so I think a game like, you know, we've done the review for Batman the Dice Game and Zombie Dice, both Steve Jackson games. They're good filler games, but it's purely luck, you know? It is purely, you know, so I think a lot of people hate dice when they feel like, well, I have something that I want to do, I have this plan, and then they have no way of executing it, and the dice end up owning you.
And I think that's where you see in Zombie Dice, you're not making a plan.
No,
there is no plan. You're just rolling dice. In Elder Sign, it's, I am collecting these items and I am planning, because it's cooperative, I am planning that I'm going to go here because I have these special abilities and I'm going to have these dice because you're in this particular position. It's almost kind of pandemic-y in planning out what you're going to do, but then it could all be ruined just by how the dice roll. That makes me want to punch things in the face.
Yes.
See, and that's the one thing I do like about, which is, and why I like a lot of failed games, even his, not his dice games, but another dice game I failed, Bora Bora. And that's what failed does, gives you a lot of things to do after you get. So it's not, the dice don't take you out of anything. The dice just provide you 20 different routes, and you pick the one that you want to take. Yeah,
that's good. And when you say that, I think of a game you introduced us to at lunch one time, Raw, the dice game. You brought in.
Great game. Another
great dice and that game. So you brought that one in, and what I noticed, I've only played it once, but maybe you can explain a little about how these, it almost feels like a worker placement game, because what you're doing is these dice that you have become your workers, it seems, from the one playthrough that we went through, but you're placing me in these different areas and you're like, oh, well, I really want to go this route. And you never feel like you don't have an opportunity. No matter what you roll, if you roll low or you roll high, you always have an opportunity because you can place your dice somewhere on the board.
You can always place your dice somewhere on the board. It's just with Raw the Dice Game, it's not always what you want. So it's still more push your luck than, say, Castles of Burgundy.
Yeah.
So it's still got that, what would you call that roll mechanic? Like, is that a Yahtzee mechanic?
Well, it seems like between. It seems like it's not all luck-based like something like Zombie Dice, but it is,
not at all. Options. You still have choices that you need to decide, but the push your luck element is still there because maybe there's a choice in that game that you want and you can't reach it yet, but you have one roll of the dice left.
Yeah.
So if you decide not to decide to go for it, you won't get it, but you still can you can still go somewhere else. So it's like that in Castles where you always have a choice that you can do. It's just not always going to be the choice that you wanted based off of the push your luck.
Yeah. There's so many dice games out there, and we've just scratched the surface of some of the ones that we love and hate. If you want to look up some of these games, we've got a review for Sagrada. We have a review for Vegas Dice on our YouTube channel. There's so many great opportunities to roll, just chuck dice. We haven't even talked about the fact that a game like King of Tokyo relies so heavily on these dice, and it's such a gateway game because you can just invite everybody to the table. I've invited kids who just came over and visited my kids stay in the night, and I'm like, hey, you guys, let's play King of Tokyo. And they take these big chunky dice and just chuck them across the table, and we have a blast playing it. So you guys, check out some of these dice games, and if you want to tell us what your hated dice games are or your beloved dice games, be sure to make a comment in the post at oneboardfamily.com. We're going to continue the dice conversation in our next segment when we talk about a special mechanic. So we'll be back in just a minute.
Alright, everyone, welcome back to the podcast. So this week in Mechanics Corner, we're going to be talking about roll and write games. Now, you may be thinking, what is a roll and write game? Well, luckily, you're listening to a podcast about board games, and we're going to talk about it. So, Bob, can you give the listeners just a quick intro of what a roll and write game is?
Essentially, roll and write games are usually small, portable games that involve dice, rolling dice, and marking those results of those dice on sheets of paper. Or in some cases, games that decide to include whiteboards with dry erase markers, which is always appreciated, because sometimes, if you like the game a lot, you can really run out of paper pads that they give you to write on.
You don't
on.
Know how many times so, I've played Quicks, and I'm like, guys, we're nearing the end of this pad of Quicks.
Right?
You know, Quicks
exactly.
Pages. I don't know what to do, guys. You know.
You know what to do. You go out and you buy Quicks Deluxe.
That's true. Whiteboards. Such a good idea.
That's where it is. It's genius.
Yeah. So probably the roll and write game that most people are most familiar with, Bob, would be Yahtzee, right? You know, That's the game that, you know, I grew up playing Yahtzee. I remember my dad introducing me to Yahtzee when I was probably 5 or 6. And he was like, hey, we used to play this all the time when I was a kid. Let's play Yahtzee. And so anytime my uncle and aunt would come over, they would play Yahtzee with us. It was one of those games that I have really fond memories of, even though it's very luck based, but you have 3 opportunities to keep rolling. And, you know, it's just one of those games that I have good memories of, even though that thing sucks sometimes. The game's rough. So hopefully we'll introduce you to better versions of Yahtzee over the next 10 minutes.
There's not to take anything away from Yahtzee, because like you said, we all grew up on that. So that's where that's where everybody started, you know? I mean, but a lot of the more newer created, more modern roll and writes include a lot more player interaction and objective based things and completing of goals, locking other players out, take that element by noticing other players taking die that they need. So I've seen
one themed roll and write game that you brought into the office before, Viva Java. It's themed around a coffee shop, correct?
Making coffee.
Yeah. Yes, so my wife Erin loves coffee. What is this game like, and would you buy it for that coffee lover in your life?
Oh, of course. You're taking dice on your turn, and you're rolling them to get different color beans and the different color beans create different coffees, different blends of coffee. And then as you create blends, you're getting points for creating those type of blends. And then as the dice pass, people are trying to create better blends of coffee to take things from you. Things that you do when you take coffee, you can create blends, or you can mark off special abilities on your pad that you get. And every ability you get marked off, for every, I think it's every 2 or 3, you can exercise an ability for that color bean on the board.
Okay.
Whether it's a flip a die or change a color, there's the cool thing about Viva Java is it comes with the basic board for each bean's ability, but it also comes with, I don't even know offhand, but I'm going to say like 20 or 30 other abilities that you can randomize and put on a blank board yourself. So the replayability of that game is huge if you're into dice rolling and roll and rights.
That's awesome. Now, a game that we talked about just a few minutes ago, Castle of Burgundy, just recently it hit America, Castles of Burgundy, the dice game. Rick, you've played Castles of Burgundy, the card game, and I wanted to ask Bob how the dice game compares, because he recently got this. He imported it before it got to America.
I like the dice game better than the card game, for only because of its portability.
Okay.
Go ahead, Rick.
I was going to just say, we've got the card game. I think Ryan got it actually for us, and it's fun, but there are a bajillion cards, and it takes up probably more space than the actual game does.
Well,
I think it does.
The expectation is that they want to sell you also a coffee to a larger coffee table. I don't know.
Yes, Castles of Burgundy, the coffee table.
I don't know if you've ever seen that.
I'd buy it.
Yeah.
I'd buy it.
I don't know if you've ever seen that. People also bought, when you go to Amazon, down at the bottom, it says people who bought Castles of Burgundy, the card game, have also bought, and it's like a 25 by 25 coffee table. Did you guys see that?
Get out
of here. No, I'm just playing. No.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Would you like a new house?
Don't get me wrong. I love the card game. I love every aspect of all versions: the card game, the board game, the dice game. But with if I had to rank between card and dice, I like the dice game just for its portability.
Yeah,
I saw a picture of someone the other day who was on an airplane. And actually, now that I recall, it may have been James Hudson.
James Hudson.
It was James Hudson.
Druid City Games.
Yes. Yep. He had the player pad of Castles of Burgundy and the dice on an airplane in his lap.
Yeah, yeah.
Playing the game.
That's awesome. Anytime and you can take just, Castles of Burgundy love that. On the road is a good thing.
And it feels the same.
Really? Okay.
You know, it doesn't exactly feel the same. You know, you don't get the 2 hours of social interaction, but
that's true.
It, yeah, but it to me, it didn't lose anything.
Okay.
It felt super streamlined, and I still felt good filling in. It follows the same aspects of rolling the die, using a color and a number to ship goods, to collect goods, to use silver, to use workers. It follows the number stipulation of placing on your board where you start with your first castle, and it really surprised me. That's when I really initially cool. saw it online, I completely just freaked out, and I was like, I have to have this game, and I'm so glad that I bought it.
That's good. Now, for our families who are listening, we want to bring up some really good ones that kids can get into. A game like Rolling America or Balloon Pop. You know, those are two games that I know, Bob, you have those two on hand. Tell us a little about those and how family-friendly those two options would be for a roll and write.
Oh, they're great family-friendly games. I would say that Balloon Pop, though, would be better for younger children, as Rolling America has a I don't want to say difficult strategy, but it's a lot more thinky than gotcha. You initially look at. there's a lot more. You're rolling die and you're placing numbers in the states. And those numbers cannot be any more than equal or one above numbers to the states to orthogonally yeah. placed. So up, down, left, right, they can't touch. So you can really box yourself out in that game, and it's a lot more thinky. Whereas Balloon Pop, also a great game, is a little less strategic.
And Balloon Pop is using colors, correct, on the dice?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yep.
Very cool. So roll and write games are something that you can get usually you can get a good group in. I know for the game of Quicks, you know, we've been able to get, that's one of the roll and writes that we've mentioned in previous episodes of the podcast. We've been able to get 4, 5, 6 people around the table, people having fun, having a blast playing. And, you know, what I do like about roll and write games, a lot of them keep all the players engaged. You know, that's something that I've noticed about roll and write games. Whether it's somebody taking a turn and you're able to take dice from their rolls, or you're watching for certain things to come up in other people's rolls, it keeps people engaged, and I really like that aspect of roll and write games.
Yes, yeah, I like that aspect. Like what you said, is sometimes when you roll the dice, everyone is using those dice.
Yeah, yeah. It's cool. You know? There's so a lot of good interaction. Everybody's taking
from that at the same time. Not a lot of player downtime. I appreciate that.
Definitely. So that'll end our segment on Roll and Write games. You guys be sure to check out some of these great games online, or visit your local hobby store and check them out on the store shelves, and be sure to order some things like Quicks and Balloon Pop for the family as we get into the new year. These are some really cool stocking stuffers that you can put in people's stockings this year. So we've got a brand new review for a game on the other side of this break.
All right, welcome back to the podcast. Before we get into our game review of this episode, Bob did want to throw in one more Roll and Write. In fact, I think you said it was your favorite Roll and Write right now. So, Bob, you want to throw that at us?
Yes, actually, I'm really excited about this Roll and Write. It's on Kickstarter right now. It has met its goal, so it will print. And I'm not sure about the date, but it's called Roll to the Top. And if you go on the Kickstarter, you can pledge. And if you're unsure about pledging, they actually have a website that you can check out and play the actual game on RollToTheTop.com. And I would recommend going out there and checking it out if you are interested in Rolling Rights. I've played this a ton, and I honestly can't stop playing it. It's so much fun, and like I said, I think it's right now one of my all-time favorite Rolling Rights, and I haven't even got a copy of the game yet.
That's really cool, and it's accessible to everybody. So if you're not sure if you'll like a Rolling Right game, if you don't have one or haven't had one on your game shelf, definitely check it out, because this is a free way to check out if you would even like this sort of game. Thanks, Bob.
I've got it open right now. Should I stop playing while we do the podcast?
Yeah, let's do that. Like, I think that would be a great idea.
Grab some dice and imagine that you're writing the numbers instead of picking them with your mouse, and then you'll get the whole feel.
Yeah, Rick. There we go. Okay. Well, I guess I'll do this later then. But for now, let's do our review for the week. So Ryan, this week you're going to talk to us about Kokoro. Now, this is not the Beach Boys song. Kokomo, very, very different thing. Can you tell us about Kokoro?
Yeah, actually, I went on to Kickstarter and I backed Kokoro thinking that it was a Beach Boys themed board game. And when it came in, I said, whoa, this is so much better than it could have been. So Kokoro, Avenue of the Kodama, really appealed to me because our family likes the game Kodama. It's from Indie Boards and Cards, and it's a great game. It's about building this tree and all this really cool stuff. The artwork's great. Well, Kokoro is a merging of Kodama and this game called Avenue that was a hit for 2016 that came out, and it merges these two games together. It's such a cool concept to merge these two properties and to make a really good family-friendly game that's almost like a puzzle that unveils itself little by little.
So you mentioned it unveils itself like a puzzle. I like that phrase. Kind of, what is that process of unveiling itself?
So everybody gets a dry erase board, something that Bob mentioned earlier. Even though this isn't a roll and write game, it has similar qualities, and that's why we wanted to add this in to this episode. So everybody gets this dry erase board, and you have a dry erase marker, and you're told that the first thing that you're going for is Sanctuary B or C or D. And they're these little buildings, little huts that are on the board. And essentially what you're trying to do is pass a line through that sanctuary and have the line go through these different creatures. Well, one is a caterpillar and the other is flowers. And you're trying to gather these caterpillars and flowers and score points. But it gets tricky because let's say you score 4 points in the first round, and there's 5 rounds in a game, so it's pretty quick. Let's say you score 5 points in the first round. You have to score 6 points or more in the second round. Otherwise, you get 0 points. So there's a lot of planning that goes on. And as you unveil the cards are going to show you right angles, and it's going to show you straight lines and horizontal and vertical lines. So you have to draw that exact line. But picking the area to draw it is super tough. You don't want to box yourself in, and you want to give yourself options as you move through the game.
So before I played this game with you guys a couple weekends ago, my thoughts on it were that when we played, we would all just end up doing the same thing, and we'd all end up having the same map, and we'd have the same amount of points. What is it about the game that kind of prevents that from happening? Why is it that you all end up having these different scores and these different looking maps that we have created?
Yeah, so I actually thought the same thing, because as you look at everybody's player board is exactly the same. So if 4 people are playing, why don't 4 people do exactly the same thing? Well, I think that as you look around the table and see people drawing these different lines on their board, you start to realize, no, I have a better way of doing this. Or what if I were to go after this strategy? Or why don't I work toward a future move? And so it becomes vastly different. I can tell you that the first time that Bob and myself, I think we played with like five or six people the first time I brought it into the office, and you scored like 60 something points. I had already played the game before, and I scored like 20, and everybody was all over the board. I think one guy scored 4. You know?
I think I actually won that
you
game.
Did.
And
yeah.
That was after you introduced me to that. I immediately went and placed my order on Miniature Market to buy Kokoro. And I have the game. I've had the game for about a month now. And that's the last time I've won that game.
Really? Yeah.
Yes. I cannot, for the life of me. I introduce it to everyone, and everybody loves the game.
Yeah,
and has so much fun, and I'm sitting there just making the most awful moves.
Yeah. I think it's planning, you know, the lines force you, as each of the cards are flipped over, it forces you to plan committing the line to a specific box on the grid that you have in front of you. And man, it's really hard to get it right. You know, I scored, I think, 50-something points one time because I went roundabout, went around something, and I knew I wasn't going to score very well in the second round, but I was planning for the third round and beyond. So there's a lot of different strategies that people can use, and I think that kids probably 10-plus, this is really something that'll make them think.
It is essentially a roll and write, where they've replaced the dice with a deck of cards.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's, you know, you find yourself playing that game and screaming, I need a 5 or a 3, a 5 or a 3, and then out comes a 4, and you've nothing to do with it.
I mean, you could definitely they could have used a large custom die instead of the cards if they had wanted to.
Of course.
And I know you'd have there is the element in the game of the yellow cards that would be missing. But
yep.
It's definitely based on six numbered cards, different types of cards, and you could do it with dice. Yes.
I like it. It's different. It still fits in the same category for me, but it's different. And I like it. I like it a lot.
I think Kokoro, if you're a fan of puzzles, if you're a fan of puzzle games, you know, I mentioned Sagrada earlier. I really like Sagrada because it's a little puzzly with the way that you set your dice in the stained glass window. For the same reason, Kokoro is very puzzly because it's slowly being revealed, and you're like, man, where do I put this puzzle piece? So it's really really a solid game, and the fact that it comes with dry erase boards, a little disappointed. I gotta tell you, I'm a little disappointed.
Yeah, markers
that came with it. The markers are not very good, but the game is so good that I'm willing to go hit up Staples and buy a package of Expo markers.
Totally.
We keep the game going.
Yeah, I've done that. I did that with Quix as well, with Quix Deluxe.
Okay, good, yeah.
And I find that in a couple of games that include dry erase. It's at, Telestrations, same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the markers always, you know. But,
they
dry
up really quick.
A few bucks, you can get yourself a pack of good markers from Staples. Right.
Well, Ryan, before we wrap up this episode, anything else you want to tell us about Kokoro or reasons that people should go out and get it and where they can go out and get their copy?
Well, you can check out, Bob mentioned it earlier, he ordered his copy from Miniature Market. Kokoro is now out in the wild. You can find it at your local hobby shops. You could order it on Amazon. We're going to have a full review of Kokoro on oneboardfamily.com, and of course we always include links so that people can pick these games up as they, you know, if they say, hey, this is something that my family would really dig, that's definitely something that you want to click that link and pick up the game. We make it easy to do. So, and the game's under $20. It plays up to 8 players, which is something that I absolutely love. I've played this game with 3 people, and Rick, the first time me and you played, I think it was just the 2 of us, and then my kids jumped in and we played a 4-player game. So this thing scales really well. And honestly, if you had 50 dry erase boards, you could play with 50 players. It would be the most tedious game in the world. But what was that last number?
All the way down the end of the table.
I can see it now. It's the new bingo. Yeah. Everyone's six. Exactly. So. We have a six.
Yes. What Kokoro. Number did he say?
Did somebody just say Kokoro?
I'm running 17 Kokoro boards at the same time.
Oh my goodness, that would be a disaster.
I would play it. I would play it.
So definitely check this one out. It's a great game, and we'll have a full review on OneBoardFamily.com.
Awesome. Well, Ryan, I think we're done.
Yeah, that brings us to the end of the episode. Bob, yes, thanks so thank much you, for Bob. Joining us, man, and, wow. and your wealth of knowledge with Roll and Write games. We really appreciate it, dude.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, guys. I really appreciate it. One more thing that Ryan hit on that I really appreciate about Roll and Writes, the price point. Yeah. For Roll and Writes, they're so easily obtainable. You know?
That's right. We talked recently about games that you can buy on the cheap. You know, that's Roll and Write games are there. You know, if you're worried about, you know, it's very easy to get a little overwhelmed when you see people buying games for $80 and $100. You know, I have family members who are like, are you sure that you want this $80 game on your Amazon wish list? I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure. But a game like Kokoro or a game like Quix, which you can find for $8.99 in Walmart or Target, rolling across America, I just saw that for $4.99 on sale somewhere.
For so little.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? Yeah, definitely. Lots of fun. And that's what we're about. You know, we want you guys to get around the table, have fun gaming together.
Yes, and Bob, so. I also want to thank you for destroying any productivity I hope to have this week with Roll to the Top. Thank awesome. You so much.
I'm excited about you not showing up for school tomorrow to teach the kids and being like, I got
distracted. Sorry, kids. I'm busy.
It's close to Christmas.
Right.
It's totally. Allowable.
Yeah.
So, cool. Well, you guys have a great Christmas and whatever holiday you celebrate. And we'll be back next week with a new episode. Until then, have fun gaming.
Right. Well, it's like, you know, they said, if you get nervous, picture the audience naked. And I was like, well, there is no audience, so I guess I should just be naked. Like, isn't that what I should do?
Oh,
I'm going to stop saying the word naked because I don't want to end up at the end of the podcast.
That's. I just thought about that. I was like, I don't think any of this can show up at the end of the podcast. So, okay.